So we will be speaking or attempting to speak a little bit about Bhagavad Gita tonight, and in honor of our Bhagavad Gita marathon, instead of doing one verse, I'm going to try to do the whole chapter, the whole 11th chapter. Not totally thoroughly, but an overview of the 11th chapter. So we'll put it in perspective. So 10th chapter is called what? Or what's it about? Remember 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita? Vibhuti Yoga. It's about Krishna's opulences. All the opulences that he manifests in the material world. So he says, more or less, he says, whatever great thing you see in this material world, I am that. I am adventure, I am the strength of the strong, I am valor, so many things. Anything great that we see in this material world, Krishna says, that's a manifestation of my potency. So then, at the end of the chapter, Arjuna's asking, he wants to see Krishna, how he manifests within the material world. But Krishna ends up the chapter, the 10th chapter, he says, what need is there? What need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So that's how he ends the 10th chapter. And then Arjuna says, when he starts the next breath of the next conversation, Arjuna is explaining to him that I really want to see. If you think that I'm capable, if you think that I'm qualified, let me see, how is it that you manifest yourself in this material world? How do you show your opulences? How do you manifest and maintain this material world? So, the 11th chapter can be a little confusing because it seems like it's confusing for a few different reasons. One of the reasons is it's a little repetitive. The scenes that go on are a little repetitive. And another thing is that what we're hearing in this 11th chapter is three different versions or perspectives, not versions, three different perspectives of the universal form. Okay? So Krishna's going to show Arjuna how he manifests his universal form in this material world from three. And so the first four verses, Krishna's telling Arjuna, this is what you're going to be able to see in this form. He's giving him a preview. He hasn't showed it yet, but this is what you're going to be able to see. You're going to be able to see everything from the top of the universe, which is what Brahma's abode, down to the lowest planetary systems, all at once, sitting in one place. That's what you're going to be able to see. Everything in the universe, all at once, in one place. So, if you think about that for a second, think about that in perspective to going to St. Augustine Beach, okay? So you're at St. Augustine, and you're on the beach there, whichever your favorite part of the beach is, Crescent Beach or whatever, okay? And you look out at the ocean, and what do you see? You just see this vast ocean. That's all you see. The skyline comes down to the sea level, and you just see, you know, right, left, forward, you see this ocean. But what we're seeing is just a teeny, it's not even Daytona Beach. You're just seeing a little bit of St. Augustine, a little bit, and a little bit out to the sea. You're not seeing everything. And even when you do that, even when you look out to the ocean or walk on the sand, and you think of those tiny little specks of grains, the sand grains, one individual grain, you know, how many millions of grains of sand are you seeing? It's innumerable, right? But it's just, you know, a mile of beach. You know what I mean? It's you're not seeing. So for Arjuna to see everything in the material world, from Lord Brahma, he can see Lord Brahma sitting on top of the lotus in his abode in Brahma Loka, which is the highest planetary system. He can see the snakes, the Naga snakes. We'll get down. We'll talk about that. Down in the lower planetary system, he sees it all at once, and then he also sees a few other things, which we'll get to. I won't say all that right now. So that's the first few verses of this 11th chapter. Then it goes on to, then there's another interesting factor that comes in that can also be a little confusing, because Krishna says to Arjuna, but Arjuna, you can't see me in your present eyes. You need, in order to see this form, you need divine eyes. So, if you don't read the purport there to that verse, and you don't read the purports of the Acharyas, it sounds like Arjuna got an upgrade of vision, doesn't it? You need divine eyes. But actually, it's not an upgrade for Arjuna. Because there was Arjuna with his very dear friend, Sri Krishna, whom he recognized as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his two-armed form. That was more, that's Sudarshan, it's more difficult to see than the universal form, which is not easy to see either. But to see Krishna and recognize him in his two-handed form, playing all attractive, you know, form, that's more difficult. So Arjuna, although Krishna said you need divine eyes, he kind of, my words, downgraded his vision so that he could see the universal form, because Arjuna's vision was already beyond that. Now, and that's explained in the purport there, and it's also explained by the previous Acharyas, particularly Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So that's a very interesting thing, because later on Krishna's going to say, no one before you has seen this form, right? Remember that part? In that he says, no one before you has seen this form. But then what does that remind you of? Does it remind you of some Krishna pastimes where Mother Yasoda saw the vision of the universal form? She saw all the planets in his mouth and everything. Then during the Mahabharata pre-war, negotiations, when Krishna came as the Shanti Dut, as the peace messenger into the assembly of the Kauravas, and he displayed a universal form, and they just thought, oh, it's just magic. It's just magic. You know, but so you think of different things, different people and different circumstances that where the universal form was displayed. But Krishna says very clearly, no one before has ever seen this. So that's a little, you need to have a little, it's a little concerning because you think, oh, but other people have. But reading on, no one before has seen this display. This mighty display of the universal form, because not only did Arjuna see millions of faces and mouths and bellies and arms and this and that and helmets and so many things and Krishna's forms in so many ghastly ways, but he also saw his form of time, Kalarupa, and that had never been displayed before to anyone. He saw the Kalarupa, and then, okay, I'm going to hold on and tell you more about that later, because if I say everything, then I won't get it in the proper order, the way the verses go, okay? Anyway, I'll finish that sentence. So then when he saw the Kalarupa, that's when he became afraid. That's when he became overwhelmed with, you know, fear, and he started to tremble, because that was so ghastly. He saw, Krishna also said, you will be able to see things here okay, this is text 6. O best of the Bharata, see here the different manifestations of the demigods and the Vasus and the Rudras and all the people who are administration, doing some administrative work in the universe. Behold many wonderful things which no one has ever seen or heard before. Okay. Then he says in 7, O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see and whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything, moving and non-moving, is here completely in one place. So now, think of the situation. Arjuna's there, and he had asked Krishna to take his chariot between the two armies, etc., etc. The war hadn't started yet. Krishna starts. He's about to speak the Bhagavad Gita. He's up to chapter 11 already. But anyway, so there's Arjuna. He hasn't. The battle hasn't started. So what would be on his mind is, what's the outcome of the battle? Who's going to win? And so he sees in this form, later on we'll see, he sees all the different soldiers rushing into Krishna's mouth and being smashed in his teeth, in his mouth, and some even between his teeth. Yeah. Yeah. So Krishna's indicating, well, if that's what you want to see, if you want to know what's going to happen on this battlefield, that you'll be able to see that too. So he gives him that vision. And then he says in 8, 8 is the verse where he says, you can't see me with these eyes, therefore I give you divine eyes. So this is also interesting too, because later on we're going to get a description by Arjuna where Arjuna says, even the demigods are beholding you in wonder, and they are afraid also. So what does that mean? In relation to no one can see it, only Arjuna has been able to see it. But the demigod, only at the battle of Kurukshetra, only Arjuna saw the universal form. Here on the earth, only Arjuna saw this manifestation of the universal form. But the demigods, because of their more elevated position spiritually and materially, they could, from the higher planetary system, they could see the manifestation of the universal form. So that, you know, the mind sometimes looks for contradictions in the scriptures, but there's always a solution, if you just dig a little deeper into the explanation of what's going on and who can see it. So, first few verses are Krishna giving Arjuna a description of what he's going to see. Then the description starts with Sanjaya. When Sanjaya, because he got the transcendental vision from Vyasadeva, to be able to see what's going on in the on the battlefield, even though he was in Hastinapur, which is Dhritarashtra. He got to see it anyway through Vyasadeva's mercy. So he's describing what Arjuna sees. That's the next set of verses. He's describing from text 9 to, I don't know which one, but a few more verses. Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, the Supreme Lord of all mystic power, the personality of God, had displayed his universal form to Arjuna. And then Sanjaya is describing, if you could imagine that thousands of suns rising at the same time, you might get a glimpse or a little clue of what the effulgence of that universal form was like. And so that's, and so it says Arjuna could see the unlimited expansions of the universe is situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands of forms. He saw many thousands of forms. And then what happens, from text 15 on, is Arjuna's offering his prayer, and he's recounting what he sees. So we get three different perspectives of the same universal form vision. And it, at the point where... this is text 17. Your form, this is Arjuna. Your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence spreading on all sides, like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet, I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs, and discs. So Arjuna is seeing an overwhelming vision from in front of him, above him, right side, left side, below him. He's seeing all these different manifestations and different forms of the Lord that's manifested for different purposes. And he becomes overwhelmed. He becomes overwhelmed. He says in text 19, he says, you are without origin, middle, or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms, and the sun and the moon of your eye are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance. So he's starting to become totally overwhelmed by this vision. And we can imagine if we were had a glimpse of something like that. And this is interesting to note that in all the religious traditions of revelation, different revelations that have been given to different people of different religious faiths and paths, there's never been a display like this universal form in any other religious tradition recorded. You know, this is quite an unusual and overpowering display of power and opulence and might. And so, now he's starting to tremble. He says in 20, he says, although you are one, you are spread throughout the sky and all the planets and space between. O great one, seeing this wonderful and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. So that's what I was referring to. On this planet, the battle of Kurukshetra, only Arjuna was seeing the universal form. But in higher planetary systems, because of their advanced spiritual knowledge and advanced material position, they could also see it, but not people on this planet. Then it's getting a little more intense. All the hosts of demigods are surrendering before you and entering into you. Some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfected beings crying, all peace, are praying to you by singing the Vedic hymns. Then he says, O mighty armed one, all the planets with their demigods are disturbed at seeing your great form with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs, belly, and your terrible teeth. And as they are disturbed, so am I. So we can take another little time to reflect on this, what's happening now. Arjuna now is becoming disturbed to the point that he's actually fearful. Now, he has a loving relationship with the Lord. He's a very dear friend of Krishna. He understands Krishna's position of the Supreme Lord, but he's never seen this manifest, this aspect of his potency and power. And he's also this form of kala, time. Time I am, he's going to say, time. This form of kala rupa, which is bewildering because it is showing how the nature of the material world is destruction. We're here, we're trying to be happy, we're trying to make a nice situation, and it's all going to end in death. No one gets out alive. No one. The best doctors, the best medicine, the best this, the best that, all the money in the world, whatever. Everyone's going to be destroyed. This body that we're in now is going to be destroyed. That's the nature of the material world. It's not going to change any. But to see that manifest by seeing all the people, Arjuna was seeing, 640 million people entering into the mouths of this universal form and being crushed by the teeth of the Lord, it was totally overwhelming and fearful to him. So there's a really interesting, let's see if I can find it by Krishna's grace. Okay, so he, at 25, by the time he gets up to verse 25, he's like really shaking in his boots. He says, O Lord of Lords, O refuge of the world, please be gracious to me. I can't keep my balance seeing thus your death, blazing death-like faces and awful teeth. In all directions, I am bewildered. Then, in more detail, all the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings, and Bhishma, Drona, and Karna, and our chief soldiers also, are rushing into your fearful mouth, and some I see trapped with heads smacked between your teeth. Now we need to take a little pause here at this particular point and try to understand what this universal form is. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto, when Sukadeva Goswami, in response to Maharaj Parikit's question, he's saying the first step in God realization, that chapter, first step in God realization, he's explaining there about the universal form also. And what's the purpose of understanding this universal form? The purpose is so that people in general can understand there is a Supreme Lord. He is the controller. We're just a tiny servant of him. And he's all powerful. Most people who have a conception of a God as a person can understand God is great. You know, it rolls off your tongue really easy. God is great. God is all powerful. But to actually see a display of how great he is or how powerful he is, that's another level of realization. Just like we can say God is all great, and then somebody can counteract if he's so good and if he's all great, then why is there so much suffering? And then you really have to be firm in your understanding why there's suffering in this material world. The suffering isn't coming from the Lord throwing thunderbolts at us for no good reason. He's more or less giving us wake-up calls. What you're doing, and if we haven't noticed lately in the news and the weather, a few wake-up calls that we're going in the wrong direction as a group, as a society, not as a, you know, as an international, as a worldly society. There's plenty of, you know, indications. How does he explain his position? He's neutral. He's neutral. If somebody wants to love him, he's giving all facility for that loving service. And if somebody wants to forget him and do whatever they want and not have any regard for his direction in life, he gives them that and encourages them. In fact, in this chapter, it explained that the Lord was encouraging the sons of Dhritarashtra. He was encouraging them in their nefarious activities. because that's what they wanted. So he encouraged them. And they did so many things, what you could say, like digging their own grave, you could say, you know, as a slang expression, you know. He gave them that facility. But if somebody wants to love him, there's so many, many stories and all across the board of people who in personal stressful situations, pray to the Lord for help, and somehow or other, miraculously, some divine intervention comes in. Stories after stories like that. Anyway, so now, here's another interesting little example that Krishna gives, and it's kind of easy to skip over it. This is text 28. He says, as the many waves of the river flow into the ocean. So that's a very natural occurrence, right? The rivers are flowing into the ocean. No one's going to complain about that or contest that. So do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouth. They're entering. As the rivers are flowing to the ocean, it's a natural occurrence. Because why? In the previous verse, he talked about Bhishma, Drona, and even Karna, who were righteous warriors. They were righteous. They weren't atheistic. They weren't evil-minded. They were, for whatever circumstances, they just happened to be on the opposite side. But they weren't, they didn't have evil intentions of greed and power, etc., etc. They were doing their kshatriya duty, defending the kingdom, etc., etc., because of the side they were on. So that's a natural occurrence. Then the next verse talks about an unnatural. I see, this is 29, I see all people rushing full speed into your mouth as moths dash to destruction in a blazing fire. So moths dashing to destruction in a blazing fire is symbolizing how the sons of Dhritarashtra, through their planning and scheming to overthrow and kill all the Pandavas, were rushing to their destruction quite unnecessarily. But in either case, what's the result? Rivers are flowing to the sea and the moths are dashing to destruction. In other words, in the material world, there's no escape. Whether you're righteous or you're impious, the body's going to be taken from us. This body's going to be taken from us. And we're going to all end up dead. No one, as they say, no one gets out alive here, you know? But that was an interesting little thing that I learned this time, studying on this 11th chapter. So now, Arjuna is totally bewildered and he's fearful, and he says to the Lord, O Lord of Lords, so fierce of form, please tell me who you are. That's interesting. He knows who Krishna is, or he knew who Krishna was before this display of the universal form. But seeing this form, along with this form of time, the destruction of the time factor, that's what bewildered him. Please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances to you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primeval Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is. So, okay. Just noticed that. So then the Lord says, 32, time I am, kalos me, time I am, the great destroyer of the world. And I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all soldiers here on both sides will be slain. So there's the Lord putting it out on the table. He's telling Arjuna, because remember this scenario. Arjuna, when he sees the soldiers on both sides, and he gets his chariot drawn between the two parties, and he sees the armies of both sides, he sees friends and relatives on this side and friends and relatives on that side. So what Arjuna sees is a lose-lose situation, and he wants out. I don't want to take part in it. Why should I kill my teachers? They are deserving of worship. But Krishna's saying here, he's revealing him, I've already made the plan that everyone here is going to die. So you can Even if you don't fight, they're going to die. So just do your duty. Just do your duty, and the results are, I'll award you the results, whether it's easy or not. I'll protect you. Do your duty. So that's really interesting, too. What's a take-home lesson? Sometimes when we read through the Gita, especially maybe this chapter particularly, you don't really see how it relates to us and our little lives. The thing is that Krishna has a plan. He has a plan. The whole material world is very well organized, even though it looks chaotic. But there's a plan there. There's the first yuga, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga. They all have a plan of gradually descending piety. Kali Yuga has a plan, but it doesn't end at the end of Kali Yuga, because then at the end of Kali Yuga, it'll blossom forth again, and a new era will start, and piety will be predominant, etc., etc. You know, so it might look like we get the short end of the stick here. It might look like there's no hope for humanity. It might look like that, but we have to take our faith. We have to take our faith by hearing the scriptures, hearing Lord Chaitanya's prediction that His holy name will change the face of the earth, and that's for us. That's up to us to try to execute that as faithfully as we can, stay as positive as we can by repeatedly hearing from the scriptures of the benefits of chanting the holy name, the benefits of distributing the holy name, and how people will make gradual but sure progress, step by step, by taking darshan or taking prasadam or hearing the holy name, what to speak of reading and studying and taking up the whole process of Krishna consciousness. So when Kali Yuga starts to get you down, that's where your mind has to go. It has to go to the scriptures. It has to go to the scriptures and the faith-giving and hope-giving instructions that are there in the scriptures to bring us out of the mental platform and the platform that we think, oh, woe is me. I'll never be able to make any difference. How are we going to change anything? There's so few of us. We have our own internal problems and challenges. And there's, but Krishna has His plan already. And that's what Prabhupada would tell us, remember? Perhaps you might remember. Probably you cheer and Jaigori remember. Srila Prabhupada would say, the caravan is going to go on. The dogs are going to bark. There's going to be resistance. There's going to be upheaval. There's going to be commotion. He didn't say the caravan's going to go on. It's going to be a smooth ride. But he said the caravan's going to go on. The dogs are going to bark. The resistance is going to be there. But ultimately, because why? Not because of us. In spite of us, practically. But we can help by participating as nicely as we can. But the caravan's going to go on. It's going to be successful. Krishna's assuring people of success. Lord Chaitanya, let's put it down. Lord Chaitanya is assuring people in this Kali Yuga of success if they take to the process, if they hear the holy name. And this is what we think of, not just on Vyas Puja Day, for Srila Prabhupada's Vyas Puja Day, but particularly it comes into the mind, how fortunate we are that somehow or other, totally undeserving on our part, we've come in contact with these transcendental sound vibrations, with Srila Prabhupada's books and his process and his program and the devotees. Somehow or other, the whole course of our life has changed because of that. The whole eternal course of our life has changed because of our coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And it's changed in this, not just this life, but the whole eternal progress. And ultimately, and Bhagavati Prabhu's not here, but I'm going to quote my favorite quote of Srila Prabhupada's books ever. It's in Nectar of Instruction, verse text number 3 in the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, the process of bhakti yoga is so pure and potent that once having begun, one is dragged to ultimate success. Hari Ho.
Jai.
You know? That. So So our success is guaranteed. What? And so this is similar. Similar. I'm stretching it a little bit, but I've got to bring it back to the 11th chapter. Similar to Arjuna's position. There he was. There he was on the battlefield, surrounded by millions and millions and millions of personalities, all ready to fight with him, and such great fighters, not just little guys either, but huge. And, you know, it's overwhelming, the odds against him. But Krishna said, it's already taken care of. You just do what you can do, and you'll be successful, because I've already rigged it. I've already made the results. The results are going to be there. So similarly for us, in this Kali Yuga, we're just very small, burnt remnants of Kali Yuga, not, speaking for myself, not particularly advanced, but still trying, you know. The success is guaranteed, sooner or later. That's the point. Okay, so then there's a whole, this chapter has like 55 verses, which is relatively long chapter. Okay, so Arjuna gets to a point, he's overwhelmed, and he says, I don't want to see this anymore. Can you just show me your forehand form? Krishna shows him his forehanded form, then he shows him his two-handed form. And he says, at that point, when he shows him his two-handed form, he says, this form is even more difficult to see than the universal form. To see his form in love, to see his form in a loving attitude is more difficult to see. Okay, but then I want, so, okay, Krishna says in 47, no one before you has ever seen this primal form, unlimited and full of glaring effulgence. Okay, and then he says, what's the qualification to see this form? He says in 48, first he defines it by negation. No one before you has ever seen this form of mind, for neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor pious activities, nor by severe penances, can I be seen in this form in the material world. So he, first of all, by negation, he says, well, studying the Vedas, it's not going to help you see it. Doing this, doing sacrifice and giving in charity and all these good things, that's not going to. But only, then he describes. Where does it go? Ananya Bhakti, I have to find that one, hold on. Okay, 53, he says it again. Okay, 54, he says, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am. There, standing before you, and thus can be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. In other words, it's revealed knowledge. Because Krishna was there on the battlefield. Dhritarashtra and all his allies were seeing Krishna, but they weren't seeing him as the Supreme Lord. Arjuna and his brothers were seeing Krishna, and they were seeing him as the Supreme Lord because they had love. They weren't envious. But just seeing Krishna, I mean, so many people can come and take darshan and see the form, but seeing Krishna, that's revealed. He's revealed to us. He's revealed in the heart through the consciousness, through the loving attempts that we make. So therefore, we're always encouraged to keep on trying those loving service attitude, developing that loving service attitude. And hearing, one thing Prabhupada always says, hearing from the proper source about Krishna and his potencies. And then he ends the chapter, the 55th verse, he says, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, certainly comes to me. So that's Krishna's promise. And he has the potency and the power to fulfill that promise. We can make different promises to our kids or our spouse or this or that or whatever. And circumstances can just change at the change of a dial and we're unable to keep our promises. But Krishna can always keep his promise when he chooses us. Yeah. And he has the potency to do that in so many ways. And so therefore, we can develop our faith and our love in those promises. So I'm going to stop. I have a couple more things to say. Then if there's any comments or questions or clarifications, we can have a little discussion. But one simple takeaway, not the most important thing, but what I was thinking of as one of the results of hearing this chapter and hearing the mighty potencies of the Lord, one simple little takeaway is for us to understand how insignificant we are and how all potent is the Supreme Lord. Because the mind, I don't know if it happens to any of you personalities, but the mind always has the tendency to try to make one think that they're the best at this, they're the most that, they're the, you know, indispensable person here, and this and that. But in actuality, our real position is totally insignificant. Just as, again, that example of walking on the beach with those teeny little grains of sand, you know, they were compared to the size of the spirit soul, which they're way much bigger than the size of the spirit soul, but still, those teeny little grains of sand. How can one little grain of sand over here think he's more potent than the grain of sand over there? He doesn't even know that the grains of sand over on the other side of the room exist, because he's so limited. So we're so small, and Krishna is so great. Therefore, that's not false. That's our real position. So just by remembering that also helps bring up our loving devotion towards the Lord. I'm small and insignificant, but please accept me in your service. Krishna doesn't need our service, but yet we need his service. We need to serve him. So please accept me in your service. And Srila Prabhupada says, if we chant with that, like that cry, the cry of the baby for the mother, please help, you know, please pick me up, then that's a very deep connection that we have with the Lord. So that was one of my thoughts that came from reading this chapter. Any comments or questions or clarifications or whatever you'd like to say? Yes, dear.
Yes. Hello. Yes. Could you please explain in the scriptures where what it actually means or what Krishna is actually saying when he says, just give up all forms of religion and surrender directly onto me. I shall protect you. Have no fear.
That's a good question. Krishna says that at the end of the 18th chapter. Just surrender. Because what did he do in the Bhagavad Gita? He explained all different processes of elevation. There's not just one process of spiritual elevation. There are many processes of spiritual elevation. So what he explained in Bhagavad Gita was the process of karma, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, work for me, meditate on me, discriminate between what's matter and what's spirit. All of those are very helpful, but not easily executed in this age, in Kali Yuga, where things are whirling around us and our memory is short, our life is short, and there's 10 million distractions and 10 million difficulties per minute, you know, not easily executed. But the process of bhakti yoga, bhakti, offer your love to Krishna, that is easily executed. So give up the processes of religion and just surrender to the Lord and be his instrument. That's actually, I skipped that first. Nimitta matra, he says to Arjuna, nimitta matra, just be an instrument. So in order to do that, surrender to Krishna, be his instrument, then we have to hear what that means. Just like many people within the Krishna consciousness movement and outside the Krishna consciousness movement say they love God, you know, or however they say, however term. But Prabhupada would always challenge people when they would say that, I'm following Christ, or whomever, you know. Are you really following his instructions? that he would, you know, we can say those things easily, but are we really following his basic instructions? And same with inside our movement. We can't think it only means them. It also means us. I'm a devotee of Krishna. Well, now here's what he's saying to do. So just follow that, and gradually one become purified, elevated, and 100% in love with Krishna, spontaneously. Just like Srila Rupa Goswami says, just like at this particular stage, I'm going to give you the example in a second. Just like at this particular stage, our attraction for Krishna is not 100% spontaneous. You know, we're a little attracted to Krishna, you know, this and that, but we're also attracted to X, Y, Z, other things. But there's a state of a natural attraction, just like the attraction between the opposite sex. Nobody has to go to school to study how to be attracted to a man or a lady. And no man has to go to school and get a PhD how to be attracted to a lady. It happened. It happened. So, that example, Srila Rupa Goswami is saying, just like a young boy or a young girl has attraction for a young boy, and a boy has attraction for a young girl, I want my attraction to be, for you, my dear Lord Krishna, to be that spontaneous, that automatic, that like a line, an iron and a magnet, that force. You can't stop it. So that, Krishna says, doesn't come just by following rules and regulations mechanically, but it comes by, and it doesn't mean that following rules and regulations is not important, but beyond that, another step up is following the rules and regulations out of love. And then beyond that is even just love. And then we're getting into higher and higher level. But just like the gopis transgress, quote unquote, morality by loving Krishna so much, they were willing to, you know, but that's not, that's a higher stage. but it's there, you know. So that's some part of your answer. Okay, thank you. Someone else? Jai Gauri?
Hey, thank you for the class. You know, the Arjuna and Krishna, they were in a chariot between the two armies. And Sanjaya was relating it with Dhritarashtra in a palace. So for him to be able to describe with details all that Arjuna was seeing, you know, Vyasa must have given him also the eyes to see.
Yes, I tried to explain that. Krishna didn't give him the eyes to see. Vyasadeva gave him the eyes to see. Vyasadeva and great sages in that caliber are trikalagya. They can see past, present, and future. So but the ordinary soldiers, they couldn't see. The ordinary, you know, soldiers on the battlefield couldn't see, but Vyasadeva gave him the story is that Vyasadeva gave Dhritarashtra the choice. I will benedict you with vision. I can restore your vision so that you can watch the battle of Kurukshetra. And he said, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see my sons die. Because, you know, in his heart, he knew that that's what was going to happen. But, so Vyasadeva gave it to Sanjaya so he could describe it to Dhritarashtra.
So he also saw the universal form like Arjuna was seeing.
Yeah, he did. He did, yeah. There's always an exception or two, you're right. Any other comments or questions or reflections, as they say? Okay, anyway, thank you. I hope you take advantage of this Bhagavad Gita marathon. Distributing Bhagavad Gita is one thing, reading Bhagavad Gita is another. So both aspects of it. Thank you very kindly. Jai Srila Prabhupada.